Hello, I'm Simon Lambert, and you're listening to a special This Is Money podcast bonus episode. I recently caught up with Stephen Bartlett, entrepreneur, Diary of a CEO podcaster, and the new dragon in TV's Dragon's Den. In this conversation, he told me the story of how he went from being a 21-year-old university dropout to building a business with revenue in hundreds of millions of pounds. And he shared his tips for those wanting to start or grow their own business. Stephen is open about his life, his motivations, his ambitions, and he's also very generous with his advice. It's a fascinating conversation with someone who's achieved a great deal in a short period of time. He's still only 28. So give it a listen.
Thanks for having me. It's an honour. I know this is a bit of an exception because you don't always have guests. So yeah, thank you.
We always like to try and get someone on if they've got something interesting to say. It's not as big as your podcast, The Diary of a CEO, which you've had some pretty big names on, but you know, it's well listened to. Our readers like it, I think.
No, I've heard it before. You know, I've heard it before. It's often been in, I think, the business and finance charts. So yeah, when they told me you wanted to have me on, I genuinely felt like it was a bit of an honour. So thank you.
Well, thanks. Well, it's been knocking around for about 5 years now, or maybe even 6 years. So we've been doing it for some time. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about your story. In less than a decade, you've gone from being a broke 21-year-old, your own words I've taken there, to building a business worth hundreds of millions of pounds, to hosting the hugely popular podcast Diary of a CEO that we just talked about, and also taking a spot as a dragon on Dragon's Den. Can you tell us a little bit about your story since you were that university dropout, and also a bit of your story before that too?
Sure. So I was born in Africa, in Botswana, came to the UK when I was a baby, 3 or 4 years old, moved to Devon in Plymouth, and joined school, really struggled in school, ultimately was kicked out of school. My attendance hit 30% by the time I was kicked out. It wasn't that I was a rebellious child, I just couldn't find the motivation to learn or to be engaged in that system. I was very preoccupied with businesses, running businesses for the school, running my own businesses outside of the school. And I wasn't lazy when it came to that. So I really doubled down on business at the age of 16 or 17. And then off I went to university with the belief that it would be different from school. And it turns out that it wasn't different from school. People were sleeping on the desks. Nobody really wanted to be there. Everybody seemed to be hungover. And what I was being taught didn't feel applicable or valuable for the path that I wanted to walk next in my life, which was to start my own business. So I dropped out and started a company called Social Chain, raised investment for that business, started a company called Wallpark, sorry, raised an investment for that business. Went on the journey of running out of money and trying to figure out how to get people to come to my website. Flyers, posters, all that stuff didn't work. Newspaper ads didn't work. So I tried this thing called social media, which at the time, I guess, was not something people believed an awful lot in. And that was really where I had my success. And I ended up doubling down on social media, building as many big social media channels as I possibly could. Had got to the point where I had about 100 million followers and we were doing 7 billion video views a month in 2017. That business climbed in revenue to about this year, 600 million roughly in revenue. And I left in 2019 to start the next chapter of my life. That business was predominantly a marketing business with clients, a media company with clients, and then an e-commerce business where we sold our own products on our own social media channels.
To go back to what you said about the school and university experience, do you think that it's just not set up to really encourage people who actually do want to go into business and be entrepreneurial and make something of themselves, and it just sort of pushes people down a certain track?
Definitely, yes. I think, to be honest, I think university is a bit of a scam. I think it's one of those things in our society which we just carry on doing because that's the way it's always been done. But when you look at the prospects of somebody leaving a bad university versus just going and getting like a job for 6 months somewhere, honestly, like when you look into the data, it doesn't compare. There's loads of top level nonsense that you'll find. Oh, well, people that go to university end up earning £17,000 more. Yeah, but that doesn't establish cause and effect. Those people probably went to lived in better socioeconomic areas. They also probably had a higher degree of education before that. University is super expensive. more expensive than ever before, and what you're getting from it is less valuable than ever before. We live in a world now where the world's information exists in the palm of your hand. If you have the motivation to go and search it out. And for me, sitting in a classroom being lectured for 2 hours is not the way that I learn. And it's interesting because I genuinely think I'm like just an insatiable learner. I spend, every day I get in bed, I go on YouTube and I learn something new, whether it's about Web3 or blockchain or about affairs going on in China or whatever. I'm just obsessed with learning. But I was, if you looked at me in school or in university, you would have thought I was lazy. And I think it tends to be the case that people are obviously lazy when it comes to doing things they don't enjoy or that aren't engaging them. And the university system is set up to engage a certain type of human that learns in a certain type of way. And that just wasn't me. And having done my podcast and sitting here with all these incredible people, you come to see the pattern where often they are, school doesn't work for them. Let me give you an example. The last person to sit with me on this table that I'm sat on now, do my podcast, was Sir David Brailsford. Just had the worst time in school. Just hated it. This is a guy, I've never met a human being more obsessed with learning. He's so deeply obsessed with learning. That's his whole thing. I mean, you've probably heard about what he did with the Olympic cycling teams. And the guy is successful because he's so obsessed with learning, but school failed him. Because he, like me, didn't want to sit in a room and be lectured to with PowerPoint slides from someone that's never done it before.
And in terms of the younger generation now, I think they think a lot more entrepreneurially as well. What you're saying there is they're not necessarily attracted to that idea of, right, school, university, employment, and I'm going to stick to that employment and I'm going to do the career progression kind of thing. You see it in the sheer number of people setting up new businesses or new endeavors or moving jobs more quickly, and the different expectations that people have when younger people are asked what they want. It's not necessarily, I want a high salary every year. It's like, I want a stake in a business. Yeah. I think what puts many people off trying to get their idea off the ground is the fear of the risk involved, but also that I don't know the right people to do it. I don't know where to find the person who can help me design the website, who can help me build the app, who can help me do all that stuff, the right people to team up with. What would be your advice to someone in that position who's like thinking, I've got that business idea, I want to get off the ground, but I just don't know how to get started?
So much of the reason we don't start things in life is because we create this like big mental obstacle that we've like, that's been self-created. And we look at this big man, this like Mount Everest we've put in front of ourselves. All of these things I think I need to do that I have no idea how to do. And we think, God, that's a big mountain to climb. I'm just not going to bother. And we are naturally creatures that are, live in avoidance of psychological discomfort. So when you see an obstacle that big in front of you, one that you don't feel competent in climbing, of course you're not going to do it. You're just going to procrastinate and talk about it for a long time. So the key, as I've come to learn, is to, and this is also, again, what Sir David Brailsford has said to me, but pretty much all of my guests when it comes to goal setting have said to me, is instead of the big ambition you want to achieve, focus on the process of getting there. So instead of saying, I want to be the number one podcast in the land, which feels, I mean, the minute you think about that, it's like an intimidatingly big thing that causes a little bit of psychological discomfort because it's such a big goal. So put that aside and instead focus on the process. So step one would be, I need to buy a microphone. You can buy a microphone. You know how to buy a microphone. Step two is, I need to write down what the concept or the format of the show is. You can do that. Step three is, I need to find a way to edit the podcast. You know you can do that. And it's really all of those small itemized things that end up leading you to becoming the number one podcast in the world. But as Sir David Brailsford says, when you become results minded, you procrastinate and you do nothing. And I've seen that in my own life. I've seen it in my friends' lives. So you have to break that Mount Everest down into loads of little stones that you think you can carry today and focus on that. And it's all about the process. It's not about the podium, the outcome, the mountaintop. And that, with that in mind, the answer to your question becomes like, what can you do today to start? Can you think of a name for this business you want to start? Could you make the Instagram page? You know how to make an Instagram page. Could you think of what the website's going to be called? Could you go and buy the domain name? These are all things you know how to do. And for me, that's how I started. I didn't have a mentor. I didn't even know what the word entrepreneur was. I didn't know what that word was until I was one. I wasn't, because back then I don't think there was such a, like, being an entrepreneur is a bit of a, like a club now. It's like a lot of people consider themselves to be an entrepreneur, but they've never really started a business. They get like so into the idea of it that they kind of like go to all the networking events, but don't ever actually manage to start anything. I was like the opposite of that. I was a kid in my room trying to figure out how to build a website and how you name a business just by like Googling it. And honestly, like the whole, like, there's a lot of BS around, oh, you need to go find a mentor. Is Google not a great mentor? It knows a lot more than any single individual does. Is YouTube not a great mentor? Is the Diary of a CEO podcast, go and like and subscribe, is that not a good mentor? Do you know what I mean? So like, it's just, again, this, you don't have any excuse in this day and age when information has been so democratized. And if you're finding yourself making an excuse, oh, it's not the perfect time, or I don't know, it's probably because you're avoiding the psychological discomfort that comes with like your illogical and your unhelpful thought process about how daunting this task is. It's actually not that difficult if you're willing to work hard. I actually have a like a really deep belief, and again, I've got various biases. Of course, I had a lot of luck along the way, because just everybody has luck along the way. But I do deeply believe that people really underestimate themselves. I think like 99% of people I met could be so much more, and they could be so much more if they simply believed they can. That's why my favorite ever quote is, those who believe they can and those who believe they can't are both usually right.
And once people start making those small steps, the momentum builds, and all of a sudden they suddenly discover that they've actually started that business.
Yeah, it's again, and one of the things I write a lot about in my book is about compounding returns, so like compounding interest. Warren Buffett, I think, calls it the eighth wonder of the world, which is, honestly, you just focus on the small things and you find a way to be consistent with the small things, and then you sprinkle in a little bit of Sir David Brailsford's marginal gains. So like, ask yourself, and I posted this on all my channels this morning, because the Diary of a CEO now is the number one podcast, and I was trying to articulate what the most simple foundational reason why the podcast went to number one in a year. And it's because of two things. One of them is, we're obsessed with marginal gains. So we have the most popular phrase in my team is, not just for me, but with the interns that have just started now, with the 23-year-old girl Grace, who runs my social channels, is, let's find the 1%, or can we find a 1%? And what we mean by that is there like 1%, a 1% gain we can find somewhere? And when I say that, I mean like the music that's playing when the guest arrives in the studio, how much caffeine we give them before we start recording, the car that picks them up. I spent 150 grand on a car to pick up guests, and it's like it sets the mood. What's on the screen when they get in the car? How comfortable is the chair, and how does the comfort of the chair impact what they're going to, the lighting in the room? So you can see, I've put up these, this is where we shoot the podcast. I've installed these big black blinds because I always want it to be dark in here. I want you, when you walk in here, for it to feel intense. So, and you're looking me straight in the eyes. This light is blinding you, so you can't actually look off my eye line. And with all of these little 1%, they seem trivial, but, and that's why it was so good to sit here with Sir David Brailsford, because he's the king of 1%. It's the small, seemingly unimportant things compounding for or against you over time that make all the difference. It's not the big decisions. And the second thing is just consistency. So how can you be consistent? And if you make marginal gains and you're consistent, it's you've only got to play around with like a compound interest graph on Google to see what happens, to see what the difference that 1% can make over 30 years, you know, like, and I it's funny because when my podcast, and I used to use the podcast because it's an example people understand. When my podcast was 700th, I told my team it would be 10th in the next 9 months if we carried on. And we can see it because we can go on Social Blade and see the trajectory. And my life is all about trajectory. It's not about where we are today. It's about the trajectory we're on. And we could see very clearly that at the current rate of trajectory, we should go to number one, or at least the top five. And this is when we were 700th in the chart. So it's all about marginal gains and consistency. That's kind of my thesis.
So you've launched a new business recently, Flight Story. And that's about taking businesses that exist and helping them to tell their story, and also understanding about how that intersects with individual investors and their success as a, you know, the success of their shares and their success as an investment. Can you tell us about the idea behind that?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. So I left Social Chain. I'd spent 7 years being a social media CEO, and I had noticed a few things. The first thing is, I noticed that like everyone in my office had become an investor, and these are like 20 somethings. So a lot of this was, there was a couple of macro factors that enabled that. The first was crypto in 2017. It taught a lot of people about the idea. It taught a new generation about the idea of investing. It's the first time they all downloaded Coinbase or Binance or whatever, and then they got £500, they put it into something, and then it went up or down. That was kind of the gateway drug, I think, for a generation for investing. The other thing that's happened, like macro factors, is this whole emergence of zero interest trading, Robinhood. You can now buy stocks on Monzo and Revolut and most of these apps on my phone. So that happens as well. We've got the crypto movement. We've got the zero interest trading movement where you can just trade on the palm of your hand. That's maybe the third macro factor, which is mobile phones that have enabled all of this to happen in the palm of anyone's hand. And then the fourth factor is social media, which is social media has moved from being posted on my Facebook wall in my newsfeed to being all about private groups and communities, Discord, Reddit, Telegram, WhatsApp groups. This is like where most of my conversations happen today, even in DMs, right? Once upon a time, if you go back 10 years, this wasn't the case. If you go back 10 years, I would literally write on my friend's Facebook wall, "Hey, Tom, are you coming to my house today?" And he would have to go back onto my Facebook wall and answer the question. And we've moved to we've moved to community. The best example of this was the GameStop moment earlier this year, where a bunch of kids on GameStop on Reddit decided to invest in GameStop to blow out the shorts. So all of these macro factors. Then what happened was I started getting calls from family offices in Europe who were saying, "We're about to do an IPO. We haven't got a clue about social media, but suddenly we realized the importance of having a strategy or an understanding of how we tell our story on social media." And it just, for me, the stars had aligned. The world has changed, and it's changed to create an opportunity in a space that I consider myself and my team to be the best at, which is social media. So I started doing it. And after a year of helping companies that are about to IPO tell their story on social media, we decided to turn it into a business, which is pretty much what happened the first time with Social Chain. We didn't ever set out or write a business plan. It was just, we were pulled by the demand. So that's what Flight Story does. We will find you the people, processes, expertise, technology you need to tell your story in order to build a resilient retail investor community online. And hopefully that gives your stock a little bit of defensibility when you go to the public markets.
And I guess every business has a story, doesn't it? They were all started by someone. There was always someone somewhere who took the risk that we were talking about earlier in this conversation. It doesn't matter what they do. You've also got involved recently in a collaboration between Johnny Walker and Bang & Olufsen. This is a brand crossover. I think that Johnny Walker's Keep Walking is sort of targeted towards that entrepreneurial spirit, to get going, start a business, that kind of stuff that you're involved in. But looking at that kind of crossover with brands, one working with the other, that we're seeing lots more of, do you see that as a growth opportunity for companies, and what do they need to think about when they're coming up with that kind of idea and thinking, oh, maybe I could work with this company or that company?
Yeah, so I think it's all about fundamentally shared values. And the reason why I was compelled to work with Johnny Walker and Bang & Olufsen wasn't because of anything other than the way it was presented to me, which sounded just so perfectly in line with like who I am and what I care about in terms of my values. Johnny Walker, as you said, is a brand about pioneers, and Bang & Olufsen, and if you understand the creativity that goes into how they select the designers, their artists, their engineers, it's so pioneering in the same way that I've spent my life pioneering my own path. So these are two brands that I felt were so aligned with my personal values, outside of the fact that I do, my cupboard behind me on this one here is full of Johnny Walker's products. It just felt like a match made in heaven. And I think when you're trying to establish brand partnerships, especially like a triad, it's all about aligned values and it really making sense. And these are two brands that, yeah, if I was to make a audio centric electronics company, it would probably look and feel a lot like Bang & Olufsen, it would definitely have the same values. And it's the same with Johnnie Walker. If I was to make a whiskey brand, it would feel and it would have the same brand story as Johnnie Walker. So that leads you to think, you know, this really is my story fundamentally. These are my values. So, yeah.
And finally, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about your podcast. We talked about the ins and outs of growing it and starting it, but I wanted to ask about some of the guests. You've had a pretty diverse bunch of people on there. You've had the Deliveroo founder, Will Hsu. You've had Anne Boden from Starling Bank, but you've also had Rio Ferdinand and you've had Jimmy Carr. What have you learned from talking to all of those people and all the different walks of life that they've been in?
Like fundamentally that like we're all actually not that dissimilar. And it was quite a startling realization that I almost feel now that once I hear the start of the sentence, I can answer the end of the sentence based on the last 10 guests that have started the sentence in the same way. So like my dad was like this with me. I then go, okay, well, that explains this, this, and this. And so fundamentally what you're finding out is that, although the stories are different and the people are different, the fundamentals of how humans operate, and if you poke it like this, then this, it pokes out, the reaction you get is a protuberance on the other side. Like we're all very similar. And for me, that was a really liberating thing because it suggests that all of the stuff that we go through in our lives, all of the fears, worries, anxieties, mental health problems, they're not a consequence of you being broken. It's like where the humans are supposed to be, there's a correct way in which a human is supposed to live and be and belong and be happy. And yeah, and that was the really kind of like liberating thing for me. It was also super inspiring because it's good to know that we are fundamentally the same. It gives me a feeling of control that if something's happening in my life, or if there's a symptom of something in my life, or if I want to be successful and I'm feeling certain things, we all feel that. And so there is an answer. That's what it says to me. There is an answer. There's a way. There's a way to be happy. There's a way not to have anxiety. There's a way to achieve your goals. And it's not it doesn't need to be such a like a mystifying, complex thing. It's actually really simple. There's a human way to achieve most things. And there's a human way also to be sick and to be depressed and to have anxiety and to be miserable and to not find love. That for me is what the podcast has done for me and hopefully for some of my listeners that have listened to multiple episodes.
And I mean, some of those guests have been very honest with you. I mean, you know, told quite personal stories. Something like the Jimmy Carr interview, for example. Do you think it's important that when people are seeing interviews or listening to things with people who are basically highly successful, highly motivated individuals, that they also hear the stories about when stuff didn't go so well, not just the ones about the great successes that they had?
Yeah, and that's maybe, I don't know if that's the reason, but maybe why the podcast has done well is because, I mean, the idea for the podcast is hidden in the name. I wanted really successful people to open their diary and tell me the truth. Not the like, how did you do it? All that stuff. I guess one part of it. But like, tell me the truth. Like when I spoke to the CEO of Monzo, and he told me that he wouldn't have started Monzo if he had known how hard it had been. And he had a red phone by the bed, which rang when there was emergencies. And he lived with anxiety. And when he opens his eyes in the morning, a crushing weight of the realization of his life would dawn upon him. This is the reality that you don't get in the Forbes interview. This is the reality you don't get in most interviews. It's the reality that I knew when I started my business and had the worst days of my life. But you don't get that on the like jet ski Instagram post about be your own boss, don't work for anybody else, live your own dream or you'll end up like living theirs. So I'm trying to like demystify all of that BS. And this is, you know, I sit here with everybody from Patrice Evra, who cried his eyes out and told me he was molested as a child, to Russell Howard, who cried his eyes out here, to Jordan Peterson, who was here 2 weeks ago and cried his eyes out on my kitchen table. And you hopefully are tapping into something you don't hear a lot, which is the full picture of success or striving or sacrifice. And even sometimes I sit here with guests and they've achieved so much in their lives, but what was the cost? That's like one of my favorite questions to ask. And I remember asking that to Sir David Brailsford. Well, he's single. He doesn't have anything, a ton of balance in his life. You know, he's wants to spend more time with his daughter, but he just is so neurotically obsessed. And that I asked him, are you obsessed? He said, yeah. that he can't, like, it's, once you've learned a way to live, it's hard to unlearn that. And so you end up looking at like the Liam Paynes of the world from One Direction, or Eddie Hearn, or Sir David Brailsford. And although on the surface, you probably wanted to be them or achieve what they've achieved, after the interview, you probably, like, after sitting here with Liam Payne from One Direction, who got to tour the world being flocked after by tens of thousands of girls, like, I'm a young guy, I would love that. Oh, thank the Lord I wasn't in One Direction. No, Jen, from the bottom of my heart, thank the Lord that I'm not that. Thank the Lord for my relatively simple life. And you only get that if the person's willing to be honest and they're not trying to push a book or to sell you something. And hopefully when people come here, that they're not trying to do that.
That was Stephen Bartlett, a man with lots to share about getting ahead and making a success of yourself, and someone who I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of in years to come. As well as our weekly This Is Money podcast, where we round up what you need to know each week, we'll be bringing you more special bonus episodes throughout 2022, with more interviews with interesting people like that one with Stephen. So make sure you subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your usual podcast destination, and visit thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to find out more and find all episodes past.